You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. We're on the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. We've got an all-star panel lined up for you guys on the program this afternoon. Doesn't get any better than this. Dave Malinsky is going to join us from Las Vegas, Nevada. Mark Lawrence joins us from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And Bill Lee joins us from space. The spaceman, Bill Lee, on the program. We'll talk a little baseball with Bill. We'll talk life with Bill Lee. We'll talk NCAA basketball with Dave Malinsky and with Mark Lawrence as the countdown is on the Sweet 16. Rapidly approaching. We're a little more than 24 hours away from tip-off in the Sweet 16. Any climatic start to the NCAA tournament. The drama picked up over the weekend, but I can't recall an NCAA tournament in recent memory that's as stacked as this. Stacked with blue bloods and stacked with NBA talent. And, you know, we've got like three of the top five, six, seven picks on the floor in a UCLA game against Kentucky. Michigan and Oregon, a couple NBA ballers on the floor there. Kansas and Purdue, NBA ballers. So if you're an NBA guy, keep your eye on what's going on here so you'll be all that much smarter when these guys coming into the league next year. Although it's amazing, isn't it? You know, when you look at like players in college, we always overhype them all. You know, Buddy Hield, man, this guy might be the next Steph Curry. Buddy Hield's struggling to score 13, 14 points a game. You know what I mean? Maybe he'll get better, but everybody gets humbled. Same thing with the pro game and with football as well. These quarterbacks are freaking studs. Jared Goff was a stud in college. Like, he really was. Not a stud in the NFL. It's a gamble. And we've been so focused in on what's going on in the basketball world, college basketball right now. The NFL draft around the corner, that's rapidly approaching. I look forward to jumping in and talking some NFL football again. We got the WBC going on tonight. Yet, truth be told, all of our cappers, for the most part, you know, these guys are serious guys. So, you know, they're not really jumping into the deep end of the pool when it comes to the WBC. I know a lot of them are betting it, but they're hesitant to give picks. We'll talk a little bit about the WBC with Dave Malinsky, although Dave hasn't been capping it. He's just enjoying it as a fan. But if you haven't been paying attention, man, the WBC has been off the hook. Tonight we got USA and Puerto Rico. Toronto Blue Jay fans, keep your eyes on Marcus Stroman. You know, I like Marcus Stroman. The Las Vegas win total for Marcus Stroman is 10.5 wins for this year. I feel that's too low. I mean, we're talking about a guy that's going to be, you know, supposed to be the ace of a team that's supposed to win about 87 ball games this year. Stroman should be able to win more than 10.5 games. Stroman got lit up last time he played against Puerto Rico, and it's interesting. We have the same pitcher, Seth Lugo and Marcus Stroman tonight, and it's intriguing to me that the fact that these two guys faced off against each other, so the Americans and the Puerto Ricans have already seen Stroman and Lugo so far. So we'll talk about the WBC as well. But as I stated, the countdown is on to the Sweet 16, and as sure as the sun is going to set and the moon is going to rise, as sure as it is that it's dark at night, LeVar Ball is going to step up and say something stupid. And, you know, it's nice to see that LeVar decides to step up. You know, his son's only a couple of days away from the biggest basketball game of his life. You know, we only have the two winningest programs in college basketball history playing against each other. No big deal here, right, LeVar? You know, the UCLA Bruins have won 11 times, man. The Kentucky Wildcats have won the second most championships, 8 times. You know, we got 19 championships on the freaking floor. We got multiple draft picks on the floor. Lonzo Ball is either top pick in the draft. A lot of people say Markelle Fultz is going to be the top pick in the draft. Lonzo Ball is a badass. Nevertheless, probably going to be the second pick in the draft if he's not the first. We saw Malik Monk and what this kid can do. An explosive offensive player and a kid that steps up and makes defensive plays with block shots when needed. DeAndre Fox is a kid that's getting a lot of hype right now from NBA type. So we're going to have three guys that conceivably go in the top 5, 6, 7 picks in the NBA draft. And here we have LeVar Ball. Now, my deal with LeVar Ball is, you know, okay, you know, you're a loudmouth. It is what it is. We're in an era of loudmouths. We reward loudmouths in today's day and age. But to me, it's just the fact that, like, the distraction that you have become and the attention that you take away from your kid. But we should be talking about how great Lonzo is. And the thing is, LeVar is a big jackass, but Lonzo's a good kid, an unselfish kid on the floor. He makes his teammates better around him. But it's becoming such a freaking sideshow that I don't even think NBA teams are going to want to deal with this guy. So, LeVar Ball, he's ripping his other kid in high school, lost in the championship game. That's a coach's fault. Of course, he's ripping a coach. You don't think that he's going to rip Steve Alford the freaking second that the season's over? You know he's going to. And it'll be the same crap going into the NBA. I tell you what, he's not making a lot of friends right now. So, a couple of weeks ago, he called out Michael Jordan. LeVar Ball, I would have beaten Michael Jordan in my prime. Your prime, you were sitting on the end of the freaking bench in Pullman at Washington State. What the hell are you talking about, Michael Jordan? Now he raises it up a notch, and he's upset the king himself, LeBron James. And normally, listen, over the past 2 years, I've been critical of LeBron James at time. I've gained more respect for him over the years as he's become a man, and I got no issues with LeBron anymore, and I'm on Team Braun when it comes to this. So LeVar Ball, and even though I will say LeVar Ball's point is a valid one, but he just should have left LeBron's kid out of it. So basically, he was talking about how his kids are so great. They're the next Currys. They're better than Curry. They're better than Jordan and everything else in between. And he starts talking about LeBron James's kid. Now, if you're unaware, LeBron James Jr., no pressure there, eh, Braun? Like, really? You name your kid LeBron James Jr.? And yes, the kid's a basketball player, and he's a pretty good basketball player as well. I think this is from like last year, actually. Look at here. He's only like 12. He might be 13 now. He's 12 or 13 years old. He's a monster, the kid, all right? Crazy skills. There's all kinds of, let's go to YouTube, all kinds of videos of LeBron James Jr. doing crazy stuff with a basketball, all right? He's a little winner, too. So, you know, the kid, you know, whatever, the kid's balling. LeVar Ball says, well, he's not going to be a good player because LeBron James is a great player. Now, listen, he has a point in the sense that he said, look at Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant's father was a professional basketball player, but not a great player. He said, look at Steph Curry. You know, Del Curry was a very good player, but not a great player. You know, he says, if you have a great father, that the son will never be any good because of the pressure, and he starts going on, which is kind of contradictory because LeVar Ball was talking about how good he was. But he does make sense because you sucked. LeVar Ball. But the point is, LeBron James, he's going to have to learn with people, you know, talking about his kid. If his kid's going to be going and playing, you know, basketball at a big-time college and then playing in the NBA, there's going to be criticism. You realize LeBron might actually play with his son. His kid could be in the NBA in 7 years, man. As crazy as it is, LeBron could still be around in 7 years. We're all getting old. That's the bottom line here. But the kid's only 13 now. And LeBron James says, keep my family out of your freaking mouth, LeVar. LeBron James is pissed. I would get it. If LeBron James's kid is 20 years old and stuff, LeVar Ball can say whatever the hell he wants to say about him. We're talking about a 12 and 13-year-old kid. So once again, LeVar, just shut the hell up, dude. Let your son soak it in. It's about your kid. It's not about you, jackass. And speaking of jackasses, we'll wrap this up with the media. And I'm a jackass, but not as big of a jackass as everybody else in the media is, and I didn't fall for it. I saw the headlines across the boards yesterday that LeVar Ball says that Kentucky is just a tune-up for UCLA, and I'm thinking, oh my God, like, did you really just say this? Kentucky's a freaking tune-up? I'm thinking that Steve Alford's going to want to punch you in the face as much as Michael Jordan or LeBron James wants to punch you in the face right now. But I was actually thinking, even LeVar Ball wouldn't have said this. So I did a little digging, and I started clicking around, and I'm like, where did he say this? To who did he say this to? Turns out it's some jackass in Kentucky with 3 Twitter followers that started this. And of course, everybody picked up on it. It's alternative facts. It's fake news. You know, the fake news trend has hit the sports world, as I've told you. LeVar Ball is going to say something stupid on his own. We don't need to make things up. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. We are live. And we got a great show lined up before you. We got the spaceman, Bill Lee. I used to speak to Bill routinely in my earlier years on the radio in Montreal. He's a regular on the radio in Montreal. I think he's on like a daily basis with Mitch Melnick. It's a great hit, actually. It's one of the best hits out there. He's very Bill Walton-ish. Like, you just ask Bill Lee a question, he's going to go for 8 minutes and start talking about the world. But people forget how good Bill Lee actually was, I think. Because he's such a crazy dude, people like forget. Guy started two games in arguably the greatest World Series ever, the Red Sox and the Reds. Dave Malinsky, he's pretty good too. Dave Malinsky is going to join us from Las Vegas, Nevada a little bit later on in the program. We also start off with a guy that's damn good. Playbook.com's Mark Lawrence joins us. Mark, always a pleasure. How you doing?
It's always my pleasure, Gabe. I'm doing great. How you doing?
Well, yeah, I know you're doing great because I read your playbook and a lot of winners in there, Mark. There are a lot of games where you had the point differential right down exact or within a point or two. You're calling teams by 13, they won by 12. You're calling teams by 6, they won by 5. You had a pretty good opening round, didn't you?
I did a pretty nice opening round in that NCAA tournament guide. It worked out well for us. I think more important than how they fared was the information inside that guide, which would sort of get you to the sides in the basketball games and all in all the sides. It did work out well.
Well, that's an angle I want to look at here, as opposed to, we'll talk about a couple of games, but you know, one of the strong points of Mark Lawrence's playbook is his database and the history of past trends. So let's take a look at some of the playbook Sweet 16 notes and trends. And something that catches my eye here, Mark, in the Sweet 16, and is evident, is 17 of the last 19 champions were either one or two seeds. This is sort of the Sweet 16 is separation, like teenagers breaking up. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, separation 16. The cream rises to the top this weekend, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, Gabe. You know, usually we'll find two or three double-digit seeds at this point that barged their way into the Sweet 16. This year we only have one, that being Xavier, an 11 seed. But the truth of the matter is they begin to separate themselves now, beginning this final four games, this Sweet 16 matchup, these next four games over the next 4 days, especially into the Elite Eight round. So the cream, as you say, will rise to the top.
All right, so let's start off about a team that I actually picked to be cutting down the nets when it's all said and done, the Kansas Jayhawks. Kansas Jayhawks, one seed. So let's take a look at how one seeds do in the tournament. One seeds, back-to-back, straight-up ATS wins in the tournament, 20-8 against the spread in the Sweet 16. So teams that open up the NCAA tournament and cruise through the first two games tend to continue if they're the top seed. 20-8 against the spread puts the Kansas Jayhawks in this spot.
There's a real nice little tightener inside that too, Gabe, if you note that our incredible stat in this week's Sweet 16 guide. Those same number one seeds off back-to-back straight-up wins and covers, when they take on an opponent that's off two wins exact, meaning that opponent did not win its conference tournament game, that tightens to 17-0 straight up and 14-3 to the spread.
Ooh.
So strong numbers in favor of the Kansas Jayhawks, especially in this game against Purdue.
Yeah, we'll get to this game in a second, but I was surprised that the number wasn't a little higher, with all due respect to Purdue, to be honest. All right, let's talk about the two seeds and how two seeds do in the Sweet 16. Two seeds favored by 11 points or less are 4-1-1 against the spread in the last 3 years, which leads us to the Arizona Wildcats. Yet there are some numbers on Xavier's side here too, but what do you make of this one in Arizona? Arizona should beat Xavier, but Xavier aren't getting any respect, Mark. 45-1 to win it all and 11-1 just to get to the Final Four.
I think what a lot of people are forgetting about Xavier is the fact that they were a preseason top 20 pick. They went through some massive injuries throughout the course of the season. They got healthier. They're playing their best ball of the season right now. It's a big, big number to laying into a team like this. But then you're looking at Sean Miller, Arizona. He's been here 6 times in the Sweet 16 rounds. He's won 4 of them, so he knows how to win these Sweet 16 games as well.
Yeah, to me, this is a game that comes down to the number, actually. Arizona's probably going to be up. You can't discount Xavier. you. You're right. They lost Edmund Sumner. That really hurt them. But, you know, Trayvon Blue is such a great player. But, yeah, they're a really dynamic team when both those guys are healthy. All right, let's talk about the three seeds. So this is where the drop-off. And we talk about this, guys. We've told you time and time and time again, 17 of the last 19 winners were one or two seeds. And, in fact, the last 10 championship games, we've had it was a one or a two seed nine times, with the exception of UConn, I guess. All right, so the three seeds, 2-8 against the spread in the last 4 years. So this is where we see, it's like the mountain just got steeper here for these teams. And this is what I talk about, the cream rises to the top. Even the three seeds have been struggling, Mark, 2-8 the last 4 years.
They do. They seem to sort of arrive to the Sweet 16 round feeling content, but they have to bring their A game forward, and they have trouble doing it in this round. The only thing I'll say about these numbers, about these three seeds of late here, is the fact that of those 10 games, all 10 were favored. This year, we find one of those three teams an underdog, that being Oregon as we speak.
Yeah, it's interesting, but it's funny. I look at the three seeds here, 2-8 against the spread the last 4 years, three seeds in the Sweet 16. Look at this, and I think Baylor, very vulnerable. UCLA, man, that game's against Kentucky. That's just a toss-up. And then you got the Oregon Ducks, and I'm looking forward to your opinion on that one in a minute. All right, four seeds, just 2-6 against the spread in the last 3 years. Four-seeded teams that are alive right now, all of them. Butler, Florida, Purdue, West Virginia. And to be honest, Mark, I got all four of those teams losing their games outright.
Well, it wouldn't be a surprise. Right now, the four seeds have had their way in this tourney game, as we talked about early on. 8-0 straight up, 7-1 to the spread this year in the tournament are four seeds. So they've done really rather well. To the number here of those four teams here, I'm kind of like leaning a little West Virginia and Butler here for no other reason because of the success their coaches have had in this tournament.
All right, seven seeds. Seven seeds. If a seven seed is a three or more point underdog, they're 0-3 against the spread in the last 3 years. This one's interesting because it's South Carolina, but the number is 3.5, so it's right on the ledger of your trend.
Yeah, it sits right there. The surprise team, everybody says Xavier, the Cinderella team, Michigan, arguably because of where they came from, but nobody's given South Carolina their due. They're really a surprise team right now. A lot of people thought that, number one, not only were they overseeded, perhaps they shouldn't have even been in this tournament, but they've proven that critics wrong. They won and covered both of their basketball games because they've averaged over 90 points a game. We'll see whether or not that continues this week.
Eight seeds have done well. Wisconsin is an eight seed. They get the Florida Gators. And nice run by Florida, but I think they had favorable matchups. ETSU were a little bit overhyped. Virginia offensively challenged, and Florida an offensively challenged team that played good defense, but they have a better offense than Virginia. It was a good matchup for the Florida Gators. To me, Wisconsin are a dangerous team. I like Wisconsin getting the points here, and I like to see that eight seeds are 3-1 against the spread in the Sweet 16.
Well, you also throw in the fact that Wisconsin is one of five teams that are back in the Sweet 16 that were there last year, Gabe. And while there's some good points and bad points for those teams, one of the good points is when they're underdogs, and that's what Wisconsin is. A Sweet 16 returnee who is an underdog in this round. I'm with you. I like the Badgers in this contest.
10 seeds, 8-2 when getting points in the Sweet 16, which is, shows the 10 seeds because they're getting, they're usually getting a boatload of points. So this puts Xavier in the Musketeers into this realm here as a 10 seed, getting 7.5.
Well, if you like Sagarin, Jeff Sagarin's numbers, this is a power rating play that favors Xavier because he calls Arizona by only 4.5 points. So there's a little bit of an overlay to Arizona here in this contest, and you can't refute the success Xavier's had in this tournament. My goodness, you look at their numbers here, 22-4 to the spread the last 26 games in the tourney. They do know how to cash a ticket.
I said 10 seed. They're an 11 seed, but the stat is 10 seeds or lower. 10 seeds or lower in the Sweet 16, getting 8-2. Xavier, the 11 seed. There is a letdown factor. Teams who win by 20 or more, and we talk about this in the NFL, Mark. I remember from the playbook in the database, you know, teams that score 40 or more in the playoffs, they generally don't cover the following week. And here we have a situation, teams who win by 20 or more are 0-5 against the spread. Last five puts Kansas and Florida in these spots. But, you know, Kansas and Florida, there's not much of a point spread in their games, to be honest.
No, there isn't. Florida is practically a win situation. And one unique thing about Florida, they held their opponent to just 39 points in that victory here. That's good news for them. But the bad news is when teams do that, when they hold opponents to less than 40 points in this tournament, they're just 2-8 to the spread the next NCAA tourney game.
All right, let's go rapid fire through three games here. Purdue and Kansas, something that we talked about the numbers with the one seeds, but caught my eye and great number from the playbook. We encourage people, get the playbook if you want these numbers. But Matt Painter, 33-83-2 against the spread when giving up 70 or more points. And I'll tell you what, it's going to be hard to hold Kansas to under 70. They're averaging 83 a game.
The only way Kansas gets held under 70 here is if the clock shortens out and they have to shorten the game. There's no way in the world they're not going to top 70 in this game. I like that stat, and I do like Kansas in this contest.
Now I'm worried, Mark, because I remember I was outside the Orange Bowl or the stadium in Miami at the Orange Bowl. It was Oklahoma and Florida, Bradford and Tebow, national championship. I did a TV hit, and I said, I love the over. And I said, the only way this game doesn't go over is if the only way it stays under, I said, unless the moon falls and crashes on the stadium. And yeah, famous last words, the game never threatened going over the number. Michigan and Oregon. It's funny, Mark, I was on the Ducks bandwagon ahead of anybody. I jumped off, and I'm a Michigan fan, and now I'm getting steamrolled by people running on the Michigan bandwagon, and I'm worried because suddenly Michigan are a favorite here, and, you know, I don't know, man, the Ducks, it's crazy how the Ducks just went from being a contender to people thinking the Ducks are going to lose every game they play in now.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I think they think the injury is catching up. It's either that or everybody's falling in love with Cinderella here right now with the job that Michigan's done. But, you know, I'm going to tell you this, that if you take a look in the Sweet 16 round games, when teams come in off underdog wins like Michigan did, they're just 3-16 to the spread when they take on an opponent that didn't cover the spread. So that's a bad roll for Michigan here. I think the better team is the higher seeded team here. That's Oregon. I like them plus the point to pack Michigan's in their Cinderella season.
Well, not to mention, Michigan basketball is a lot like Michigan football. Struggles against the Pac-12. 3-15-1 against the spread. Last 19 times against a Pac-12 team with a winning percentage of 600 or more. Great playbook, Mark. Job well done. I can't wait for the Final Four breakdowns, but we encourage people to go to playbook.com. You can get it on your mobile device as well. And Mark's got a free play over. It covers the experts rolling the dice on the Sacramento Kings tonight. Kings 8-4 against the spread, taking on teams on no rest. And the Bucks played the Blazers last night. The Bucks are just 1-5 straight up with no rest. Big win for the Bucks last night. Thanks, Mark.
Hey, my pleasure as always, Gabe. Enjoy the games. Be well.
There's Mark Lawrence with us. One thing I'll say, though, about the Sacramento game, and normally I'll just jump on blindly on one of Mark's plays, but Sacramento are so beaten down. They have so many injuries. You don't even know who's going to be in the damn lineup tonight, so I'd be weary of this game. All right, the Spaceman, Bill Lee, joins us next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Let's rock and roll, man. We've had some great guests as far as baseball is concerned over the last couple of weeks. Last week, it was our honor to have Tim Raines on the program. Of course, he's going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame this summer. We're now joined by a man who is a teammate of Tim Raines, a man who's a member of the Boston Red Sox Hall of Fame. Well, you know, we can go on as far as all of his accomplishments are concerned. He's a man that loves baseball, a man that marches to the beat of his own drummer, a man who's they've made movies about. He's got multiple books that he's written. The one and only Spaceman Bill Lee joins us on the Fantasy Sports Network. Bill, it's always a pleasure, my man. How you doing?
Good afternoon, you boys in Toronto. I just left your sleepy little town of Dunedin. I loved it. I loved it. I found a pool. It was 88 degree water, 8 feet deep. I could tread it, and the morning doves would come down and drink with me and coo my wife, and I was going, what a romantic little town.
You know, I wish Florida wasn't so crazy. Like, Florida, you know, it's Florida, you know, whenever you hear about someone high on bath salts or zombies or, you know, trailer hostages, it's always Florida. And I wish it wasn't that way, because it's pretty cheap, you know, and it's warm, like you said, right? And nice weather down there.
It is. It seems like all the degenerates, Bowie Kuhn and all the reprobates, go there because of the Homestead Act. You can do anything you want and murder your family and still keep your 160 acres in your house. And the greatest thing was in Mayaca, the river down there just north in Sarasota. They found a sinkhole with like 400 alligators in it. You know, some deer had fallen in it, and they were having a free lunch.
How did you when you were with the Red Sox? Like, did you have a place in Vermont? And it's funny, because then you go to the Expos, and, like, you only played for the Red Sox and the Expos, and not only do you live, and we'll get to you running for the governorship of Vermont, but how did you end up in Vermont? It's almost perfect, isn't it, with the Expos and the Red Sox and what you're all about. But you're a California guy living on a farm in Vermont. How did you end up in Vermont?
Well, it was a halfway place between the cul-de-sac bar and the Elliott's Lounge, and I couldn't live in either of the towns because I had so many warrants out for me in Boston. So I had to live in Vermont, where they didn't know me, and now they know me, so I got to leave there too.
All right, so Bill, listen, I was telling, we got some younger guys here at the Fantasy Sports Network. They're numbers geeks. They love baseball, but they're number guys. And somebody asked me, they said, Bill Lee really didn't go to the bar in the middle of a game once, did he? And I'm like, yeah, he did. But let's set the table here about what is true or not. So you go to the bar, it was the Brasserie 99, right? The closest tavern to the Olympics.
No, it was the Soixante Set then. It was the 77,
yeah,
which later turned into the 89.
Okay.
So it was, and I was leaving the ballpark, I was mad, and Terry Mosier was walking in, and he saw me, and he grabbed my hand, and we both went to the bar together. So I was with Mosher at the bar.
In uniform.
In uniform, and I was shooting pool with this guy that had either cerebral palsy or, you know, some childhood defect. He ran the table on me. It cost me a bunch of beers. You know, I had four or five beers with Terry, and then it turned into the seventh inning. We were running out of pitching, and I decided to go back because I thought they may need me. I'd only thrown a little bit the day before, and, you know, my arm was healthy, so I wanted to help the team, but I never got in the game.
No, so they never called for you in the bullpen or anything, right?
No, they didn't. I got to the bullpen. I was in the bullpen. They never got me up. They'd gone through Fryman and everybody else. What we needed that day was actually a pitch runner. We got the tying run on, but there was no Rodney Scott because they released him. We only had 24 men on the roster. If they had kept Rodney Scott that day,
yeah,
Rodney would have stole second. I would have probably come in the game, driven in the winning run, and we would have gone on and had a tremendous year. But Fanning and his short-sightedness and McHale and all those reprobates, I never got a chance.
I had Dave Van Horn on recently. I had Steve Sachs. We were talking about The Simpsons and the Simpsons episode. And, you know, he was in the episode because Ryne Sandberg turned it down. How can you turn down The Simpsons, Bill? You imagine?
You can. It was one of my biggest years. I ran for governor and I was on The Simpsons. They were in Fenway, or they're in Boston, and they went by, and it was the Bill Spaceman Lee Planetarium. So
you have a lot of honors being in a Simpson. Is that right up there?
It's right up there. I tell you, it's the longest running show. I got to see this Brockmire, this new show about sportcasting, and it's a brand new show coming out in April on HBO or something. So I'm waiting for that one.
I wanted to ask you about you running for governor of Vermont, and you know what? Your slogan is the best. It was the best ever.
No.
So far left, we're right. So far left, hey, we're right, man. I got to ask you right now in this political turmoil. I mean, you're a 60s guy. It's almost the 60s again. Like, you know, we got Jeff Sessions talking about, like, pot's going to send you to hell. You know, it's going to be abortion. I'm expecting people to get shot at Kent State soon, Bill. Like, does it almost feel like we're back in time? What's your take on Trump?
Oh, my God. He should have been exterminated. I mean, if his mother had been sterilized so many years ago, we never would have had it, you know. And that's Buck versus it's a Supreme Court decision versus Buck versus Bell. It goes way back when they illegalized sterilization of people and stuff, which was really horrendous by an 8-1 court decision. It looks at the decision of an American court system in political, it's such a joke. I cannot believe we've even evolved this far. But I'm already purchasing land in British Columbia, I think 76 acres. So I'm going to be a compatriot, and I'll be living up there, and I just can't live down here anymore.
I wanted to ask you about another president who, it's funny, people hated him at the time. Now they're like, you know, George Bush wasn't that bad. But I remember you on a Mitch Melnick show talking about George when he was with the Rangers, and, you know, it's no secret he used to be a partier. I remember you made a joke that, you know, the first baseline was gone because George snorted it. Did you do coke with George Bush, or did you just smoke like weed with him?
Just weed. It was my weed. They said, you know, you smoke dope with George W. And I said, no, he smoked with me. I didn't smoke with him. That was mine. You know, another story about you can see the apocalypse. I'm driving out of Mobile, Alabama on a back road, and I'm crossing the border into Mississippi. And there is a sheriff, got a Mexican pulled over, and a border patrol car. A border patrol car like you see up on the Canadian-U.S. border. And I'm going, you know, what the hell's that? And my wife goes, there's just some people they won't let into Mississippi.
The spaceman, Bill Lee, with us. All right, Bill, I want to dip into your vast knowledge here and your quick takes. I did this with Tim Raines, and it was great. I just threw names at him, little word association, and he gave me his thoughts on each guy. I'd love to do it with you. So I'm going to start off with Tim Raines. I guess, you know, he was a rookie in 81, so he was just a kid. You weren't around him all that long, but Tim Raines, what's your impression? And over the years, now he's in the Hall. What's your take on Raines?
I know. They called him the Rock, you know, and it wasn't because of his low body fat.
Okay. So they always, and it almost bothers me because, and I'm a partier, Bill. I'm not going to lie. I'm from Montreal, right? So I'm from NDG. I partied. But I had Tim Raines on last week, and everyone, oh, yeah, he used to slide head first because he had an 8-ball in his back pocket. And I was like, you know, he was a good baseball player too, all right? You guys going to drop the coke thing after a while or what?
Well, I tell you, he had to, you know, because I remember he stole like 87 bases. The next year he goes to rehab, he comes back out, he only steals 15. And the French fans, I remember the signs out there in right field yelling, Raines goes better on coke.
And I remember you telling a story too, and in Montreal it was a big hashish city, right? So a pot, especially in the 80s, 70s, 80s. So it was little pieces of tinfoil, and I heard you say that, you know, you used to drop your hat all the time, but it, you know, you weren't doing it accidentally. You were picking up the grams that people were throwing at you.
You pick up every piece of tinfoil you can find anywhere in Montreal. I'll tell you, it's like going to the Mayfair Tavern out in Pointe Claire on a Thursday. Everybody's out there bartering. It's unbelievable.
You pick up, yeah. It's like gold. You pick it up. All right, a guy that you faced off against, and a guy that I lived in Vegas, and I used to see him all the time, and he's actually a cool dude. Hangs around the casino, talks to people. Pete Rose. Your take on Pete Rose?
He would run through hell in a suit of gasoline to play baseball, and he's probably one of the biggest reprobates out of Cincinnati ever since General Grant was there and conquered the city on the Ohio River. He said they should hang everybody in Cincinnati because every time we leave, they start trading with the Confederates.
And I guess, you know, you and Pete are two different completely personalities, but I'm sure, like, you know, you respect the way he plays. Like you said, like, nobody wants to win more than this guy, right?
Exactly. And if your fans get a chance to Google ESPN, the classic, they have a show where I defended Pete Rose in a trial of the century on ESPN, and I actually got him elected by a jury of his peers at Harvard University when I defeated Alan Dershowitz when I was with Johnny Cochran. Cochran and I defeated Dershowitz and Arnold and Palmer, the pitcher for the Baltimore Orioles.
Jim Palmer, awesome. Awesome story right there. Who was the hardest, that Reds team, you know, so good. Who was the toughest guy to get out? Who's the toughest guy to get out on that Reds team, the big red machine?
Wow. You know, Rose with two strikes, he could hit you. He got me with two strikes, and he hit a line drive up the middle. He was the hardest guy. I threw the hanging curveball to Perez. I'd gotten him out all the times before. Bench hit the double down in the right field corner off me. You know, they said I was the best pitcher in that series. I had a great, but I got two no decisions.
Yeah.
You know, I lost.
You had the lead. They had the lead twice, right, Bill? Both games you started, you left, you gave them a lead.
Yeah, I left them, gave them a lead. And we tossed it up like a fur ball and a big cat.
I wanted to ask you about a former teammate. We'll get out of here in a minute or two. But a guy that, you know, growing up in Montreal, I was an Expos guy. But I was a big fan of Jim Rice. He was just so stoic and a badass. And even now to this day, no one ever talks about Jim Rice. Like, he didn't get the credit then. He doesn't get the credit now. Your take on Jim Rice.
Jim Rice, the left fielder for the Red Sox?
Yeah.
Well, he was a pain in the ass, you know. He was. I had troubles with him. I fought with him a lot. but he robbed Glenn Borgman of two home runs. I was pitching in Minnesota. Two balls over the fence, and he went over the fence and got them both. People underestimate his ability. He had a cannon for an arm, and he is a Hall of Famer. But, you know, I would always take our center fielder over him any day of the week. Yeah, he was the toughest guy on our ball club with the Expos, and deservedly he should be in the Hall of Fame with Rain next to him. Too bad Valentine never had the career. All three of them would have been there together.
Yeah, you know what, Freddie Lynn, a hell of a player. You're right. Yeah, this guy, yeah, he'd run through a wall to catch a ball too. All right, we'll get you out of here on this. We got the WBC. Listen, man, you played in World Series. You played for money. You played for no money. Hell, Bill, I think you'd probably pay money to play baseball if you had to. So I got to imagine that you're loving this WBC. You got multimillionaires out here, and they ain't playing for money. And, you know, they're playing. It's so intense, man. It's like Brandon Crawford, the guy's a two-time World Series champion on the Giants. He said, a World Series is nothing to like this. He goes, this is crazy. Never been anything like this before, he said.
This is you're right. It is so dramatic, and it's so hard to doing spring training, but it's the only time you can do it. But I think the WBC, once they get it as an Olympic sport again, you know, maybe we'll find a way around it. But I love watching the Israelis playing, and I love the Chinese haven't scored in 15 decades, you know. They make it. that's the big red machine.
It's like the Chinese Revolution. It takes time, right? You know, they ask, Bill, how's the Chinese Revolution doing? It's too early to tell. Yeah. Talk to us in 300 years.
Yeah, when they finally push a run across, it'll be like a constipated rabbit.
Hey, Bill, it's always a pleasure, my man. I love catching up with you. You're the best. Yeah. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us. Safe travels. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, good luck to you guys. You got good radio. Thank you.
There's Bill Lee with us. Yeah, I really enjoyed that. Dave Malinsky is going to be great next, too. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. All right, we don't have a ton of time. We went a little bit long. Yeah, it was a great show today. What can we do? We had Mark Lawrence, we had Bill Lee, and now we got a great guest as well. Mr. Dave Malinsky joins us. Dave, quick hit on the WBC. Me and Bill were just talking about it, and you know, it sounds cliche, but these guys are playing for the love of the game and for pride. And you watch these 100 millionaires out there diving for balls and running out of the dugout after home runs. And it's been tough to handicap, but it's one of these deals where you get drawn in and you're like, wow, this is just great, intense baseball. And it's going to be off the hook tonight. Hopefully it's not raining again like it was last night at Dodger Stadium. But we got Puerto Rico and the States tonight. Stroman versus Seth Lugo. It should be great stuff, Dave.
You know, it is, because now the intensity picks up even more. Even players who might not necessarily have cared all that much in the beginning,
Yeah. It
ramps up now. So this is really big time.
No, you're right. When it just said, let's just do this, and you're right. Now they're in the final. And you know, I saw Adam Jones. He goes, we know the U.S. has never won this before, and we want to win. Like, they're dead serious. It's a tough game, man. Stroman versus Lugo. Puerto Rico, Dave, they're 7-0 in this tournament. They haven't lost, man. They're going to be tough to beat.
They are going to be tough to beat. From a market standpoint, though, we're seeing money to USIC as high as $1.30 out there right now, as low as 20 total, 7 a typical total for Dodger Stadium.
You know what's interesting, Dave? Stroman and Lugo, they were the starting pitchers when they played earlier in the tournament, and Puerto Rico won 6-5, so I just find it interesting that the hitters have both seen these pitchers recently.
But not all that deep of a look. You know, and that's part of the issue. Of course, same thing can be said the other way, though. The pitchers now have a chance to know what they did the first time around to the hitters. I just think the intensity is going to be outstanding. But here's what's also going to be really interesting, too. This will not be a purely USA crowd.
Oh, no.
That's what makes some of this really dynamic.
I think it might be more Puerto Rican, to be honest with you. All right, Dave. So
let's say slightly outnumbered, but louder.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of like the Japanese last night. The 34,000 people were damn loud. You know, it never rains in L.A. Just their luck. It had to rain. It was raining hard, too, last night. All right, Dave. So let's jump in here right now. You wrote about the Midwest. We got Michigan. They're riding this wave. No way if their plane doesn't skid off the runway do they catch fire like this, literally and figuratively. Here they are right now. Beeline's just a neutral court master, man. But it's amazing. Now they're favored against the Oregon Ducks, Dave.
Yeah, it's something that we certainly would not have seen a couple of weeks ago. But I'll tell you what's happened hand in hand with this development. The incident with the plane brought them together a little more emotionally. But it's the big kids inside. Morgan and Wilson have really picked up their game since the start of the Big Ten tournament, both averaging in double figures. In fact, Wilson 16 points a game. So it's having those added pieces that Beeline can work in. And when he's got five pieces on offense, there's not a better tactician in college basketball.
Dave, the theme of the weekend in the first two rounds were the overs. And it was 36-15-1 to the over. We look at the totals this week, and you know, there's very, very few low posted numbers. Do you think the theme continues as far as getting there with the late fouls and the pace? You know, it seems like the old stuff about kids being phased, about new arenas, is thrown out the window nowadays with so many dunks, and it's just three balls and dunks, etc. But what do you think about that? Because you know, it's very rare that you get that 36-15-1 to the over. What do you think? It continues this week?
You know, it just might, because what we do have is we've got basketball arenas this week. You know, fortunately, there are no those cavernous football places, so these are all basketball arenas. There are a couple games where scoring is going to be difficult. South Carolina, Baylor, there are going to be no open shots around the basket anywhere, so some are going to be pretty ugly. But UCLA, Kentucky, that is not only as good of a Sweet 16 matchup, but as entertaining of a matchup as you're going to find in this round.
Well, you know, Dave, we got about a minute and a half here, so I was going to ask you about this game. Unbelievable. We got Lonzo Ball, DeAndre Fox, Malik Monk. These three guys could be among the top five, six, seven players taken in the upcoming NBA draft. Two of the winningest programs ever, UCLA 11, Kentucky 8. And, oh, yeah, Calipari's going back to Memphis where they hate him. So that could be interesting if the locals get tickets and they get in there. They'll be pulling for UCLA. This game is so hard to pick a winner, Dave. I'm just thinking about the over, actually.
I kind of like it because the markets have actually shrunk it down a little bit. These teams aren't capable of guarding each other because the talent for the upside is so much. I mean, let's hope that Fox and Ball go to opposite conferences in the NBA, because 5 years from now, they'll be going head-to-head in the All-Star game.
Yeah.
These kids have amazing upsides, so I like it because they're going to attack aggressively.
Dave, we got 1 minute. We got some NIT action on the board. You been playing that at all?
A little bit. Enough to be totally confused, because everything I knew about Cal State Bakersfield all year is that they couldn't shoot. So what do? First two rounds, shoot the lights out. They go out there and they beat California and Colorado State in the first half of those games by 40 points. They have been absolutely dynamite, and it's something I didn't think they could do.
What do you think tonight, though? I got the old over in that game tonight against Darlington. That's a tough game. It's hard to doubt them again, right? I mean, it's tempting, but can these kids keep traveling around America and beating teams?
Well, and this is also, you let everything out tonight, both of these teams. You know, sometimes the final minute, you don't foul when you're down to 10 or 12. Tonight you do. Tonight you play to the final second, because getting to Madison Square Garden means so much to these programs. I could see a real wild scramble at the end.
Yeah, wow. I know. Hey, Cal State Bakersfield or UT Arlington are going to the Big Apple. Wow. All right, Dave, it's always a pleasure, sir. I wish we had more time. We will next week. Definitely, we'll talk about the Final Four. Thanks, Dave.
Hey, good luck, everybody.
We encourage people to go over to pregame.com. Go right up there on the front page. Dave's got a daily column, and it's a wealth of information. It's great stuff. No kidding. We're going to come back with an NBA lineup that I hope is great stuff. Coming up next. All right, we've got to be quick with our NBA DraftKings lineup of the day. Normally, I don't like spending this type of money on Westbrook, but I don't really love the other point guards this evening. And he's coming off a poor night. He only put up 37 DK points the other night. I think he's going to explode. He's put up 77 or more four times his last 10 games. He's an automatic 60-plus. I think he has a big night tonight against the Sixers. Speaking of the Sixers, Stauskas getting big minutes, put up 86 DK points his last three games. He's streaky, but he's shooting the ball well right now. Garrett Temple, far from a household name, but he's been solid, 21 or more DK points in four straight games. The Kings have a ton of injuries, guys, tonight. Temple's going to be playing. He's probably going to be starting, and he's going to get 25 to 30 minutes at least. Aaron Gordon been very consistent with the exception of the game against the Warriors, put up 26 or more in five of his last six. Tristan Thompson put up 13 points and 13 boards in the earlier matchup against Denver. It's going to be a high-scoring game. Denver is soft in the paint. Kyrie Irving also lit up Denver the first time. 27 points, four boards, and five assists for 44 DK points. Highest total on the board. They put up 234 points last time they played. Kyrie Irving's going to go off for 50-plus tonight. Labissiere's been putting up nice numbers, man, over the last four games. This kid's averaging 17.9 real points per game. Jamal Murray. I'd prefer Gary Harris, and I'd prefer Barton, but I didn't have the money, and there's going to be a million points scored in this game, and Murray should be able to get us 25 DK points for $4,500, and it's not bad. All right, let's get to our plays of the day. Don't look now, man, but the Philadelphia 76ers have covered seven straight times. We keep on getting points set with them. Give me the 11.5 right now. I thought I was only getting 10.5. Give me 11.5 plus the points against the Thunder. Cavaliers going to beat the Denver Nuggets tonight. The game's going to go over 227.5 points. Little NIT action for you. Illinois and UCF. Both these teams have been real good in the NIT so far, but I think UCF gets it done on their home court tonight. Speaking of home courts, Utah Valley, your story comes to an end tonight. Wyoming gets it done. We're going to lay it at 3.5. Cal State, Bakersfield, Texas, Arlington. The winners going to Madison Square Garden to play in the Final Four of the NIT. I don't know who's going to win this game. Probably Arlington. I'm going to go over the number. WBC Baseball, let's go under 7.5. May the winners be yours.